Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bobby Moore as a Jeff Hurst. Trevor Brookin and Billy Bones, Paolo Di Canio, West Ham United, more than just a podcast, more than just a podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon or good evening, this is More Than Just a Podcast.
Excellent.
I'm glad you did that impromptu. We're here for a special edition. It's International Week. There is no football, but we've been called a special Cobra meeting, a little bit like the government when there's national emergency. Our national emergency is West Ham. So we've come to talk about, to see if we can right the wrongs of the meltdown that's going on about West Ham tonight. With me is Nigel.
Hello.
Are you in your shed, Nigel?
Yeah, back in my shed.
After your walking holiday in Cornwall.
Yes, yeah, back, my feet are sore, but that's about it.
Also back is probably John in his loft.
Yes, hello, I'm in my loft.
And I'm afraid I've got an apologies here because George is on a train. Southwest Trains have mucked up the train, so he's still on a train. He's not with us. So we've got a standby. We've got a new presenter tonight, and that is Ian Dale.
Hello. I thought you were going to apologise for the fact that you've got me.
Where are you, Ian? Because we like to know where you're recording from.
I am in Pembury, which is a village just outside Tunbridge Wells, sitting on my sofa, watching Wales as we record.
Wow, you can see the sea from there.
So
That deserves a
Oh yeah, hang on. 1, 2, 3. There you go. So, right, no football to discuss. Let's get straight to it. What is going wrong with our club at the moment? I wrote an article on Clarence Hughes saying there was a perfect storm. Other people have said it's an imperfect storm. Let's start with you, Nigel. What is going wrong in our club? Why the sudden doom and gloom, balled out, manager out, it's the end of the world?
Because they made a rod for their own back in what they said 4 or 5 years ago, consistently moving us to Stratford. Now the fans expect them to deliver on the years of quotes that the club was going to change, when actually the club hasn't changed. It's still the same old West Ham. And people ain't happy about it.
Is it simple as that? Because there was a euphoria that I saw when we signed Little P, Chicharito. Everyone went, wow, we're moving up in the world. We've signed a striker of this quality. And yet, literally, 6 weeks later, you know, it's like World War III's broken out and suddenly balled out, manager out, stadium out, and you know, it's like we've been relegated already. Overreaction, flip-flop generation, Nigel?
Yeah, that's why I started using that phrase at the start of the season, the flip-flop generation. The same people you probably found that were saying we're going to finish top eight, challenge top six after the four signings that I sort of questioned in the age of the signings. And you know, Chicharito is a top quality striker, but he's at the peak and he's going to be on a downward slide, not an upward slide. So now, after three away game defeats, we've done all the last time about playing away and why we're no good anyway, or never have been. So it's just more panic, but it's the circus, isn't it, that is West Ham. It's not just a fouled, or maybe not even a fouled transfer window, because actually, for, you could say, pretty decent signings, it's the what comes after. The Cavalier, did he bid, didn't he bid? Sporting Lisbon come out and have a pop. Sullivan has to have a go back. Sullivan throwing Bilic under the bus by point, effectively saying it's all his fault, blokes.
Yeah, that's a motivational tactic. More of that later.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, all right. I'll take your word for that. That'll motivate me, surely.
Well, before we move on to John, you wrote a blog for us on Claren Hugh, which we're trying to show some balance on Claren Hugh. How was that received?
Well, so listen, it's a mixture. You know, you write, you're gonna get the good, you're gonna get the bad. It is quite surreal to flick through Facebook on one West Ham group and find someone that does not know me whatsoever, is not friends with me on Facebook, absolutely call me every name under the sun on a Facebook group, not expecting me to pop up.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, you know, I just popped up and pointed out, you know, friendly, that he spelt my last name wrong, which upset me more than the four letter words he was calling me. So, which, funny enough, he didn't reply. That, I'll take that on the chin. That don't, you know, if you want good comments, you've got to take the bad comments as well. So I'll take that.
Ian, I know you've written some pieces as well. What's your take of it? You sit in the posh seats, don't you? Do you want to explain to people where you sit at in the London Stadium?
I don't know if they're regarded as posh seats. I said the 1966 seats purely because I couldn't get anywhere. Because I used to sit about halfway into the Trevor Brooking stand, but quite near the dugouts. And of course, they're all corporate seats now. So in the end, I decided to go over the opposite side, even though I mean, I really like watching what happens in the dugouts and what the manager does and all the rest of it, which obviously you can't from the other side. But I could have had row three, I think, but I thought, well, you're just not going to see anything from there. So I'm on the halfway line, front row of the 1966 seats, which I call the Royal Box.
Well, truth be known, and I don't want to reveal this too much, but actually Nigel wanted 1966 seats, but he couldn't get any. But we don't talk about that, Nigel.
Well, I've got, as I said last time, Nigel, I've got two tickets. You're very welcome to join me.
I may take you up on that, just for the
novelty. Tries to make out he's all high and mighty. He is high and mighty, because he's right at the back. He's moved to band five now, by the way.
You do.
So you get a nosebleed up there, don't you, Nigel?
Well, no, because I've actually moved two rows forward from my band four seat.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you what they thought of me first time round.
Anyway, back to Ian. So, yeah, what's your take on what is this sudden disaster?
Well, it's a disaster because we've lost three games. And whenever any team loses three games in a row, there's always question marks over the manager's position. I mean, that's the fickle world we live in nowadays. I think a lot has contributed to that, which no doubt we'll talk a bit about later. In terms of the transfer window, I was really happy with Joe Hart signing. I was really happy with Hernandez signing. Arnautovic, I think, is a brilliant player on his day, but if you want consistency, you don't get that from Arnautovic. And £24 million from, I'm sorry, that was utterly ridiculous. Zabaleta, we've needed a right back for, what, 3 years now? Well, we've now got one. And although he looked a bit dodgy, and certainly in one of the games, he's an accomplished player. So I was quite happy with that. But then we get to sort of what's happened in the last 2 weeks. On what planet does the chairman of the football club go on holiday in the week up to the transfer window? I mean, he's never done it before. So you have to think, well, why has he done that? And the only conclusion you can draw is that he never intended to sign any players in the first place. That's the only reason that I can think of that he did it, because you cannot conduct a proper negotiation from your sort of beach hut in Marbella or whatever, can you?
Well, I would say it. All right, it's the first time you know about. I would argue, actually, I'm not an apologist for DS, but he actually never does. He never does the work from the London Stadium, or, you know, he does it from his Essex office, you know?
Yeah, where he's got all his records, where he's got all his equipment and whatever. Now, obviously, in the internet age, you can do things remotely. I completely get that. But what signal does it send? Well, you're not freely available to talk to the manager or to your other board members or whatever, or indeed to players or agents in the way that you would be if you were in your home office. I just don't get that at all.
I don't think he thought he was going to be outed that he was in Marbella. He often goes to Marbella in the summer. He often goes to Barbados.
Did he only get outed because of the other tweets that went out from Marbella that got highlighted by the press?
Well, I think a few people had talked he was on holiday and it did get out it was in Marbella. But, you know, I accept that maybe he would argue, if he was here, that you can do business anywhere in the world on the end of a phone, an email.
And there is some truth in that. But when you've got, like, the Carvalho deal, which I know you said was dead, 2 weeks yeah. before the transfer window, and you may well have been right on that. But when you've got, again, a very expensive player that we all hope to sign, where we've all been led up the garden path yet again, it may be for very valid reasons. We'll probably never know the answer to that. But we had it with Lacazette. We had it with Batshuayi. We've now had it with Carvalho. And no doubt we'll have another one in January. We never seem to get them. And it's, I don't want to overpay for a player. But, I mean, he's clearly a quality player, judging from everything we know and we've seen. That one of the excuses was, oh, well, we can't have him now because he's unfit. Well, he's played for Portugal over this weekend, hasn't he? So he can't be that unfit.
Yeah, we are going to come back to Carvalho. Before I move on to John, Slaven in or Slaven out, Ian?
I think the decision's been made. It doesn't really matter what we think. I've always been very pro Slaven Bilic, and I'd still like to be, because I think he's a really decent guy, transparently nice guy. But I do wonder whether he's lost the dressing room a bit. I read somewhere today, I'm trying to remember where it was, about the fact that after the Newcastle game, he just almost seemed to have given up in the dressing room. Was that Danny Gabidon, I think, wrote an article somewhere yeah. saying that. I don't know how he knows, but he's presumably still got good contacts there. Now, if that's the case, and the players aren't really going to play for him anymore, there is no point in delaying the decision. If he's going to go, and if we lose against Huddersfield, I'm sure he will go. But if he's going to go, just make the decision and have someone lined up. And it's pretty clear that Benitez is giving signals that he'd certainly be interested. He feels he let us down when he went to Real Madrid after nearly signing for us then. I'm not sure he's necessarily the right person, but there aren't many others around, are there?
Well, today, or over the last 2 days, he's committed the rest of the season to Newcastle. And he's not interested in any other positions.
I believe that when I see it, because all he needs to do is manufacture another little row with Mike Ashley and he'll be off.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to John. John, whose fault is it?
It's just a culmination again of it all, isn't it? It's another example. I'm afraid it is that old thing where if we were still at the bowling, we would just get on with it and accept it. I think we let a lot of things go last season because there was the big change going into the new stadium. It was always going to be sort of traumatic and turmoil and all these things that went against Bilic, for instance. I excuse him for most of last season because he had a lot to deal with. But I think this was the season we were expecting to see the change from, as Nigel would say, from the same old West Ham to the new West Ham we were all promised. And as Ian was just saying, we've been promised the big signings in the past and never got them. But I'd seriously think that this was the transfer window where most people were thinking, right, this is the time we're going to get that signing. This is the time we are going to get the Lacazette, the Carvalho, the Batshuayi or whatever it was in the past. And I think people have now come to realise what we are dealing with as a board. And I think it's all sort of come home as one.
But you said it's a combination of things.
Yeah.
Combination of what? The manager must take his blame. Do the fans, the fickle fans, have some part to play?
It's a combination of people that originally, there's people who didn't want to move. There are people that accepted the move because it's going to make us move up to the so-called next level or bring us up to a par with some other teams that we'd like to be there with. But it's a realisation from everybody, I think, who believed in whatever they believed in, whether it was the right thing to move or not move, that we are going to still be the same old West Ham in a new stadium, which isn't just as much fun to be in as it was in the Bowling, you know what I mean?
I don't buy that at all, because I think it's far too early to judge. It's a bit like, sort of, to bring a bit of politics into it, the Brexit talks. I mean, how on earth can you judge after one season at that stadium? I was all in favour of the move for the reasons you've just given, and I still think that it was the right thing to do. My heart would still prefer to be at Upton Park, but I think as a club, as a business, you have to take advantage of these situations that are offered to you. And I think that it actually will be a good stadium for us. We showed signs towards the end of last season that we can play there. There were some games with a fantastic atmosphere. Remember the Tottenham game, the Chelsea game, actually, in the League Cup earlier in the season. It was a fantastic atmosphere. So there can be a good atmosphere there. It's just that it's not Upton Park. We can't compare it to Upton Park. And we've got to persevere. Well, we have no choice but to persevere with it anyway. But once we get, if we get the right team, then we'll all be behind them. But it's yet again a transfer window where we've emerged from it with only three strikers at the club. And we all know that either Sacco or Carroll is going to get injured. Now, that gives an opportunity maybe to Tony Martinez to come in. But we've actually got fewer strikers now than we had last season. And you're never going to do anything if you haven't got proper goal scorers. And we hope Hernandez will be. I mean, he scored two in three games, literally the same game. And I think has actually shown that he will probably be a good signing. But if he gets injured and Carroll's injured, I mean, we're going to be up the creek again, aren't we?
Yeah, but I'd see. I agree that the stadium can be a good atmosphere when things are going well, but I think the realisation is that they're not going to go well as often as we'd like them to, because we're the same old West Ham and we've got the same old thing going on.
That's the same at Upton Park. I mean, I think people have rose-tinted spectacles when they look back at Upton Park. There were some awful atmospheres there, particularly in the last few years. If you're playing badly, you're not going to have a good atmosphere. If you're playing well, you'll have a good atmosphere wherever you're playing.
But it's also the accumulative fact of being in the new stadium as opposed to everything that you had when you were at the old stadium. I mean, all of the comforts of your usual sort of routines, yeah, your usual pub, your usual, all of that made your day,
yeah, I agree,
as much as
and I miss game of football. As much as anyone else does.
The game of football was rubbish and everything you saw was rubbish. You put up with it because you're used to it.
But you're not with it because you've had a greasy spoon at Ken's. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I just think it's so many parts of it, but I think that's a big factor. I think people there's still a bit of anger from that is flying over to now. And I also agree that, you know, the squad is very light. They've let a lot more go than they brought in, so we are very thin on the ground. People who actually look into it deeply, if you look into it properly, a few injuries and we're in big trouble. So,
I mean, just on that, and Sean, you probably know the answer to this. If we wanted to get Reece Burke or Cullen or any of the others back during the season, can we do that? Or are they literally gone for the whole season?
So the rules are that you can't bring if they're on a season-long loan, you can't bring them back,
right?
Unless there's a mutual consent from both sides.
Okay.
Usually you have to wait for a transfer window, but even then, it's a contract and you can't call someone back. If it's a short-term loan, there's more, more agreement, unless it's written into the contract itself. But season-long loans, you know, there's usually a fee involved.
Yeah.
I mean, Snodgrass, not that we call Snodgrass. In the end, Villa paid a £1 million fee for Snodgrass, and we're paying a percentage of his wages, which sort of evens itself out, but we couldn't call Snodgrass back.
See, that's a weird one. Why didn't we just sell him?
They didn't want to take the risk.
There were other clubs interested in him, weren't there?
So there were inquiries, but no one else actually put the money on the table. Villa, in the end, were the only ones to put money on the table. Because don't get me wrong, they weren't going to do Villa any favours it was who's the highest bidder and who's prepared to pay the most of the wages. I think we ended up, they're paying 60% of the wages plus a £1 million loan fee, which sort of evens it out, but no one else could put that kind of dough on the table. But no, we can't call people back unless both sides agree, and they may want compensation anyway. But let's move on, because part of the pantomime, because I wrote an article on Sunday for Ian called The Pantomime. I did get a little message from the club asking me whether I was exasperating the situation by writing about pantomime and putting a picture up of clowns of the board and the manager.
Where did that go on? West Ham.
That went on West Ham Till I Die on my column on Sunday.
Do you write for West Ham Till I Die, Sean?
I do. Funny you should say that. Oh, only on a Sunday, hey Ian.
A much more pleasant site to look at from a design point of view than Claret and Hugh, isn't it, Sean?
I'm neutral in these kind of things. So there's certainly a lot more debate. I did get a bit of grief, as you can imagine, Ian. I don't know if you read any of the comments, but I did get a bit of grief from the locals.
It's safer not to, I find.
Yeah, no, I always like reading them. I always overjoyed by
it. I enjoyed some of them comments, Sean.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Pathetic, pathetic, you bald stooge. Anyway,
I'll go and have a look.
Let's talk about Carvalho. I think John said in the week, called us a bit of a laughing stock. I called it a pantomime. I'm going to start back with you, Nigel. What's your take on, you know, some people are saying, you know, and I you know, the Sporting Lisbon communications director, I must say his words, called David Sullivan a liar and a parasite. He's now taking legal action. Let's go back to the first thing. Was he ill-informed to run that article that threw Bilic under the bus and said we made a bid on Carvalho in the first place? Nigel, what's your take on the whole situation?
Yeah, I think I don't know about ill-informed. I'd imagine that he made the decision himself and didn't listen to anyone else. You know, it's my club. I'm putting this on the website. Put this out. I mean, it creates division among the fans, because there will be fans that side with Sullivan and the board. There'll be fans that side with Bilic, and they will argue it out. And Sullivan will just walk off to his villa and pay no notice to it. And this is how it causes trouble down the line. Now, then we get to the bid itself. Did we bid? Didn't we? You know, I'm sure.
Who do you believe, though, Nigel? Let's talk about you. Who do you believe?
This is what I'm looking at. I reckon there was a bid put in. Whether we were dealing direct with Sporting Lisbon or we were dealing with middlemen, God only knows. I would imagine, knowing the club, we put in a really low bid, which I won't criticise for, because when you're trying to buy a car, you're not going to walk in and they go, well, that car's 10 grand. You're not going to go, oh, yeah, then there's 10 grand. You're going to go, I'll tell you what, I'll give you six cash.
No, that's just you, no. Nigel.
Well, we know, Nigel, we know the Telegraph have said, Jason Burke, which, oh, no, that's not muck around, we know he talks to David Sullivan. There was an email on the 10th of August offering €25 million,
but that's right?
In three installments over 3 years.
Yeah, I'd never heard of Carvalho. I don't play FIFA. I don't really pay a lot of attention to European football apart from when the tournaments are on. So I watch England play. So England haven't played Portugal. I probably saw him in the Euros that Portugal won, but to be fair, I was probably more watching Ronaldo to see what he does than the midfielder. So I can't say, oh, this bloke is worth 40 million, what they're asking. Personally, I probably don't think he is, and I don't think West Ham's got the money at the moment to go out and pay that on top of all the fees, the add-ons and everything else. So they've probably set a figure, gone with that figure. It didn't come off. I think they've played a game. I think they hoped that come deadline day, that Lisbon, if no one had bought him, Lisbon would take the money, which possibly looked like they did come offering after. It's just a bit of a mess. But that's football, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Ian, who's in the right or wrong? Is this a playground spat or...
Well, it's pretty unedifying, and anybody who ever thinks of launching a libel action usually ends up not launching a libel action because it can be incredibly expensive. And, I mean, bear in mind, this is in another country too. Nothing will come of it. He doesn't want any money. He's already said that. He said any money would go to charity. So I just think this sort of thing doesn't do us any favours. We'll never probably know who said what to whom. Clearly, we did bid at some point, but his point was that they asked us to bid right at the end of the transfer window. And he said it was too late because they couldn't put all the paperwork through, couldn't do a medical. Well, it turns out you can do a medical after the deadline. And bear in mind, the player was with Portugal then. Sullivan may be right to say, well, it was all too difficult. But let's face it, in these situations, if both sides want a deal to go through, a deal will go through. The player clearly... wanted to come. He was pictured doing the sort of Irons Cross, so you have to assume that he was keen to come. But it was just one of those situations where you thought, well, is our heart really in this? It's like all the rumours about Gomez coming from Barcelona. Again, I mean, a class player, apparently. I don't know him, but I mean, you don't play for Barcelona if you're a bad player. Did any of us really believe that that was ever going to happen if this one didn't come off? The Wilshire one, I mean, I know his injury record. I'd have actually quite liked to see Jack Wilshere come, but that clearly was never going to happen because of his injury record, I suppose. But we were all just left with an empty feeling at the end of it all, weren't we?
Yeah, I guess so. It was about managing expectations, and in some ways there was plausible deniability because, you know, the media can run whatever stories they want. Most of the media stories aren't true. Although West Ham does leak a little bit more than any other club.
Mainly to you.
But, you know, most people, you know, say, well, you know, if it's not on the website, we don't believe it. And the mistake here is, why did he have to make that statement, you know, of saying we did make a bid? Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about this in anyway. And I don't think it does either club any favours.
The reason he made that statement is quite clear, to throw Bilic under the bus. There can have been no other reason than to make that statement, to actually tell the world that you offered your manager two first-class players. Again, I've never heard of either of them, but they are supposed to be really good. And then the manager says no. Why would you make that public unless you wanted to make a point?
Yeah, I guess so. John, you at the time...
Sitting on the fence there, Sean.
John, you said we're a laughing stock.
Well, yeah. But that's exactly... I mean, how many other times have you ever seen this sort of stuff hit the press about any other club in the transfer window? It's this sort of stuff.
I don't read stuff about any other club. Sometimes I think we're too obsessed about West Ham that maybe this stuff goes on elsewhere, but we don't read about it.
You can listen to the radio, you can watch, you know... You don't see this stuff going on at any other club than ours. And that's why I said it's a laughing stock. It's just unbelievable, really. It's like some kind of sort of soap opera, isn't it? But, you know, I think they probably did make an approach early on. They tried with their usual lower bid to try and get, like, and I agree with Nigel, we haven't got the money. We can't really go out and buy a 40-odd million pound player as much as Sullivan likes to say that we can.
Not when we're loaning money, mortgaging off our...
Exactly. You know,
mortgaging off our training grounds and our London Stadium bill and our shop leases to borrow money, but that's another story.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not in that league yet. We can't afford it, really. I reckon they went in early, tried to get the player, but I think that with the three defeats and the way the season was panning out, I think he buggered off on holiday and thought, right, that's it. I'm not backing him. I'm not spending any more money on this manager. If he loses to Huddersfield, he's out, and I'll save him money for January. That's what I personally think.
Do you think sometimes Sullivan leaks information about possible big bids just to make himself look better, and then when it fails, he sort of says, well, I did try, you know, Lacazette?
Well, if he he probably has done in the past, but he should have learned by now that he's not doing him any favours.
And lots of people have been calling for the ball to go, and I'm sure you and Nigel would join in that, John. With your, you know, history tells us that, you know, you're not the most best supporters of the board. You know, they own, unless someone's prepared to buy the club, no one, you know, they can't just resign. Would be the next best thing of David Sullivan to step down as de facto director of football and let someone else deal with the football side, so he just becomes an owner. What's the best scenario? Assuming that if there's no one else to buy the club, it's not a case of bought out, because if there's no one to buy it, it's not an option. David Gold doesn't really play any day-to-day relationship with the club. You know, he doesn't run it, etc. That's Karen Brady. So where's the solution to this? Where's the end game for the anti-board or the board out brigade, who are doing this crowdfunding and getting these campaigns and want these banners and stickers, and they want to do a protest and they're not going to buy merchandise for the shop? Where is the end game for these people? I know you're not their spokesman, John, but I'm asking you.
No, is that actually happening, crowdfunding things and posts?
Yeah. Crowdfunding for board out. I think they've already raised the money, haven't they, Nigel?
I was away, so when it all blew up. So I know of it, but I can't say I've looked to see whether they raised the money or put money towards it. I don't feel the need to put money to things like that. People know where I come from. I'm not so much bald out as Brady out. That's realistically what I would love to see.
Now, just an update on Brady. That's a good link there, Nigel. For those who listen to the podcast, we were going to try and get an interview with Karen Brady. And I did ask her for this episode to do an interview. And if you were listening, you also know that we're going to get Nigel to do it. So I did get a reply from Karen Brady yesterday to say she doesn't do interviews anymore about West Ham.
But hold up, we know that's not true, though, don't we? Because she went on the Premier League show with Craig Bellamy.
Well, all right, she doesn't do interviews anymore with West Ham fans like Nigel. She didn't actually say that, but it was a no, basically, Nigel, sorry. She said, I suggest you speak to DS or DG, and we've obviously spoke to DG already. So I'm afraid your glory of interviewing your favourite director has been denied.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Perhaps I'll apply to join the SAB and talk to her there.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, they're still recruiting for that, aren't they?
I may apply.
Yeah.
While you've been talking, I've just looked up this crowdfunding thing on the Just Giving site, and they've raised a grand total of £255.
That will probably make a flag.
Yeah, well, they've still got to get to 350.
It's quickly. Go on, John, Nigel, get the other amount in.
No, to be fair, they won't get the flag in the ground anyway. I mean,
they're going to take it to away games, I think. I think they're
well, listen, someone had a flag made about Brady, took it to away games, and West Ham members of staff asked the home team to go and take the flag down, and the home team got the stewards to go into the away end and tell the person, can you put the flag away? And when he got playing, when he said why, they said a member of staff of West Ham have seen the flag up and have complained.
Too right.
Now, as someone that's had a flag that got a banning order from the Bolin, you know, save your money, people.
Did you get a banning order?
My flag from the, yeah.
You didn't get a bit banning order.
No, not me. My flag did. And don't bring it again because it was an inflammatory political message.
Yeah.
That I was trying to get across.
There you go. That's part of being the sad, famous two. Right, we're going to move on to Sacco for time. Part two of the pantomime is Sacco. And there's two things that I believe, I'm going to just say, joins these two things up, and that's agents. And I wrote that about that today. So the agent at Carvalho is Pep... I can't say the word.
Guardiola.
Guardiola's. That's the word. Guardiola's brother, Pierre Guardiola. And it appears... My sources close to the club say that's where the contact was. That's where the bids were put in. He was the go-between. And, of course, in the Sacco's case, Mark Mackay, son of Willie Mackay, someone... I had a tip-off from a French journalist before a few days before deadline day saying that Sacco was being offered around French League One clubs. And I sort of dismissed it. He's a very well-known journalist. And then I got it from a second person. And I asked a senior source in the club and said, we're not offering Sacco around. So I just wonder, if we're going to be a little bit sympathetic to Sacco, whether, and in this other situation, the agents are the real enemy, and they're the ones that control the game, and they're the ones in between, maybe almost being double agents, playing both ends of the transfer deal. And causing all this. And let's start with you, Nigel, again. The Sacco, is there many... He's been demonised. And people have said, throw him under the bus. You know, don't give him another chance. This is all your own fault. But he seems to have, after missing 2 days training, maybe easily led, he's come back, he's knuckled down, he's potentially offered a new deal. If he scores 6 goals, if he plays half the games before January, he can either have a move or double his money from 27 grand a week and get a longer deal. What's your take on the Sacco saga, Nigel?
I think it stems from what's gone on in the past 2 years with him and Bilic, where he got the injury away. Then there was a rumour that he fell out with Bilic. We tried to bring him back too quick. He didn't want to play for the club. You know, we nearly sold him to West Brom. That fell apart. He then came back. I was at the game Man United away where he scored, I think, after 5 minutes in his return. Managed, I think, another 30 minutes before getting injured in the next game. Not to be seen for the rest of the season. So we finally get him fit. We know when he is fit and on his game, he's probably as good as, if not better, than Andy Carroll. And there's that side to it that perhaps the club bear in mind. Especially, I think, with Chicharito, I would work well. Then you look at... If you look at how much he's paid, though, he's probably down one of the lowest paid players. Yet, on his day, he's one of the best players. I think that probably rankles him.
Yeah, it does.
I deserve more money. So, therefore, you know, agents... Me, personally, if I ever ran football, I had this conversation with people I was walking with. The first thing I would do is ban football agents. They are... realistically the root of all evil in football, in my opinion. And the only thing that disappointed me was that I didn't back the horse. You know, because I got
there was a no runner called Happy Hammer, the Happy Hammer.
Yes, but I got told that if ever the owner's just going to watch his horse run during a midweek race, he's probably going to win. So that was my one.
So do you give him another chance, a fifth chance or whatever it is now?
Yeah. Well,
he should be fit for Huddersfield, along with Andy Carroll, by the way. Heard it here first.
The only thing about it is that we know he's had trouble with Bilic. We know he spoke to the owners, probably by phone because he went to London Stadium and no one was home.
Yeah, he didn't. He spoke to Andy Pincher, the club secretary. None of the owners would talk to him.
For all we know, they could have said, look, if Bilic might not be around, we can't sell you now. Come January, there's a good chance Bilic won't be there. Hang about, see what happens. And that's why we get to this point where if you stay and play and scores, we'll either sell you if Bilic is still here, or if you get some goals, we'll double your money under a new manager that may be more receptive to him.
Possibly. Ian, do you forgive and forget Sacco?
I don't think we've got a choice, have we, with the number of strikers we've got at the club? He's staying, and they're going to have to try and motivate him. He's clearly a sensitive little soul. We know that from his previous track record. But on his day, as John or Nigel said, he is a brilliant player. He can score goals. We've seen some fantastic goals from him. But they've got to play a system that allows him to score goals. Similarly with Hernandez. Why is Hernandez being played as the sort of single striker? Because he's never, ever played as a single striker in any club that he's been at, as far as I know. I'd love to see him play alongside Andy Carroll, but is Bilic going to play that formation? I have my doubts.
Yeah. John, just to finish the conversation off.
I agree all round. Yeah, there's no point throwing him under the bus. I do think that there's some conversations that have been had. And I agree with the scenario that Nigel said.
Should he have been offered a new contract? Some people say he should. Some people were saying he should be booed if he comes on, which seems a bit counterproductive from a West Ham point of view. And some people have said he should never have been offered a contract. He's a Judas. He's a snake like Payet, and we should have got rid of him.
If you look at some of the stuff that's come out from Snodgrass, Randolph, and some of the things that have come out since they've left, it's pretty damning for Bilic.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on inside there, and he has got a history of, we all thought he'd had a falling out with Bilic in the past. We don't know for sure. Maybe you do, I don't know. But, you know, so you can't judge it all based on the fact that he's turned the back on the club. He's just someone who's probably not getting on with the manager and wants to get away.
Look, I'm going to be careful how I say this, but my understanding is that a lot of his issues are money related, and possibly he lives beyond his means. So maybe he sort of spends like he's on the wages of Andy Carroll, etc., allegedly. And that, you know, he feels quite aggrieved that he's one of the lowest paid players at the club and has done for some time. I'm not going to say more than that.
Well, he won 500 quid on that horse.
He did win 500 quid.
But to be fair, he only put 100 quid on it. If I was in his shoes, I'd have been putting a grand on it. I don't know. That's when you know he's got money trouble. We only put 100 quid on the horse.
Right. Before we go, let's talk actually about some football. So we've got a quite important game coming up next Monday against Huddersfield. Is everybody going?
Yes.
That's terribly. I can't go because I've got to do a program on CNN at 10 o'clock. So I just have to watch it on my phone.
Poor planning, Ian.
I've got two 1966 seats up for grabs.
Oh, my.
There you go, Nigel.
So contact Ian. Contact Ian if you want seats for Monday night. So Huddersfield, injury news. You may have read and heard, and I spoke to the club today, Fernandes got injured with the Swiss under-21s. There was rumours on social media broken his ankle. It is badly sprained. They're waiting the results from the scan, but he's certainly almost going to be out. And the news I got just before we came on air is about Lanzini. The rumours about Lanzini are true. He is in Argentina. He has got a knee strain. It's a return of the knee strain. He is not going to play against Huddersfield. So you'll predict to people on your website, Ian, we'll get this information, I'm sure. And we don't know how long it's going to be out. Some people say 3 or 4 weeks. It's a bit hard to say.
Well, and Ayu is out as well, isn't he?
Sorry?
Ayu is out as well, isn't he?
Well, people are saying, you know, there's been reports of a muscle strain. Again, the sources close to the club tell me they're not sure that precludes him from playing if required on Monday. you know, and said, well, muscle strain's all part and parcel of it, and, you know, give him a massage and he'd be fine. So I'm not sure he's particularly injured.
So say all of us.
Yeah. Andy Carroll, though, the good news is Andy Carroll should be fit. Sacco and Andy Carroll could both be on the bench or starting, maybe. So here's my question to you. Knowing that injury news, we know we've got Arnautovic out, his last suspension. I think Reid might be a doubt. How do you line up? You need your first win. The pressure's on now. You've been thrown under the bus by David Sullivan. Billich knows this is a must-win game. I'll start with you, Nigel. How do you line up? What team selection do you put out for this must-win, the game of the season? 4-4-2.
4-4-2.
Who'd you put up
with
front?
Chicharito and Sacco. Chicharito needs someone like that for him to feed off of. 4-4-2. Antonio wide right. Cool, we're running out of midfielders, though, aren't we?
Yeah.
Obiang in the middle with... Is Kiyati should be back?
Yeah, he's fine.
It's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah. Well, what you could do is actually Obiang and Noble in the middle and put Kiyati centre-back. He's played there for Anderlecht. He's played there for us and done really well. With injuries, I think if Freed's injured, I'd want to put Kiyati there with Ogbonna. Creswell on the left, Zabaleta on the right, Hart in goal, and then I just got to think of a left winger.
Declan Rice.
No, he's not a left winger.
We haven't got any left wingers, have we? That's the problem.
No. He's going to have to play someone else, isn't he?
Well, unless he plays 3-5-2, that could work, and then you push Creswell on Antonio wide right. Play three centre halves.
Actually, Creswell could play left wing, you know.
Well, and Masuaku.
Yeah,
he could do that.
So, Ian, you come in. How would you change the Nigel's setup for Monday?
I would play 4-4-2 the same. Either with Sacco or Carroll. Probably Sacco, because at least he's played a few games, and then maybe bring Carroll on 60 minutes or so. I would play a fairly defensive midfield, actually. Have Antonio on the right, but then I would probably have three. I'd have Obiang, Kiyati, and either Noble or Rice. I feel really sorry for Declan Rice, because he seemed to cop the flak for... I mean, he gave the ball away, not far from the halfway line, yet he's being blamed for that first goal at Newcastle. I think it's... you have to understand how a 17-year-old is going to react to that psychologically. So I would actually like to see him play... at least some of the game on Monday, because if he's just dropped completely, I mean, that could really affect him. In defence, I would have James Collins, probably with Ogbonna. I don't want to see Font ever playing in a West Ham shirt again. Shaw Kuarte, I'm sure, would do a great job at the back, but I think Collins and Ogbonna, I know they sort of there was a few problems at Newcastle, but I mean, they are both really good on their day. And when does James Collins ever let a West Ham team down?
Yeah, it's funny about James Collins, because he's been on international duty, hasn't he?
Has he played?
Yeah. But he was in the training video today. So I did sort of ask the club, said, what's going on there? Because he was... You saw him arrive in the Welsh... He was called up for Wales, and yet he was in the training video today. So what's gone on there? Is that a little clue to what might happen on Monday if he's been called back early?
Well, that's very weird, isn't it?
We shall see. Yeah.
Or it was an old video.
No, it was a video. It had Sacco. It was a video today. There was only about eight of them training. So, you know, we're all back training after the long weekend because they all got given Saturday and Sunday off and Monday morning. Yeah, we're all back training. Well, there's only eight of them because there's so many. Well, as you know, the senior squad is only about 18, isn't it? Or is it 22? And most of them are away on international duty. Such is the pedigree of our team, our squad now, that most of the way are international.
As DG says.
Yes. So, John, what's your master plan? You're Slaven Bilic again. This is save our season game again.
Well, I read today that Reid is fit. So if you're not...
No, I'm not confirming that. I'm not denying it. I read some time ago that Reid wasn't fit. I haven't got any new information, if I'm honest with you, this week about Reid. So you might be right.
Right. But I mean, I'd go with, like, pretty much agree with Ian and Nigel. For me, it's what's going on up front, and I would go with Sacco with him because Sacco is sharper. He has played more games. So apart from that, yeah, a variation of what the other two gents have said.
Would you leave Mark Noble as captain? Or is it time for change of captain?
Now's not the time to change a captain, no. No, now's not, I don't think, the time to drop Mark Noble.
I agree with most of what you said. I would actually start Andy Carroll if he's fit. I would start Andy Carroll on Monday.
I'd bring him in.
No, he hasn't. He's not match fit. He's not played anything. Not played any football.
I'd get him to get some early goals. Bring Sacco on second half.
Last 20 minutes causing chaos if needed for me.
We shall see. Last question on... well, let's do some predictions. I know we've done that before, but a lot's happened since then. Nigel, prediction for Monday?
I'll stick with 3-0 win that I said last week.
Oof. Ian?
1-1.
John?
I think I said a draw last week, didn't I? I think I did. Let's go for a really nervy 1-0 win.
Well, I was going to go for a 1-0 win. I'll go for 2-1 win.
If it was 1-1, do you think that would be enough?
No. Well, that's what I was going to ask. My question is, what result does Bilic have to do to save his job? If he gets a loss, is he gone? If he gets a draw, does that save him for a period of time? What? Let's start with you, Nigel. Does he lose his job if he loses?
Yes. Not that I want him to. I've done it all. Everybody knows that I've loved it.
Stay of execution if he draws?
If he draws, well, even if he wins, I think it's a stay of execution because the club would look at it that he's expected to beat Huddersfield. It then goes, and this is the problem of the situation that the owners are putting him in. When they go, oh, he's got 4 games. If he loses Huddersfield, he's gone. He ain't coming back because we've got West Brom and then we've got Tottenham and then we've got Swansea. Now, if he wins Huddersfield, he's going to need a result against West Brom, I think, to save his job as well. I think to save his job, he needs a result he needs 4 points out of the next 2 games.
Ian, if he loses... Is he gone?
Well, this is where they needed to have been decisive after the Newcastle game because they would have then had 2 weeks to decide what to do or to potentially attract someone else. I think he will be gone if he loses. And like John, I say that with a heavy heart because I don't... There's only one manager that we've had at West Ham, well, actually I can think of two now, where I've genuinely almost cheered when they got the sack, Glenn Roeder and Avram Grant. All the others... I've actually been quite sad, and
not
I would.
Had a dice. Didn't you have a dice?
Actually, you know, that's 3. I've sort of wiped Allardyce from my mind somehow, but there is this growing concern of mine that he might be in the frame to come back, but hopefully not. So I think he's a bit like Theresa May. He's the Walking Dead, isn't he? We know that he's going to go at some point. So I never see the point in delaying these kinds of decisions. If they've made up their mind that he's not going to be West Ham manager at the end of the season, there is no point in delaying that decision.
Mm. John, anything to add?
No, yeah, I think if he loses, he's gone. And Ian's saying, it is inevitable. And they do it before even with Allardyce. They undermine and then they create a situation where it becomes untenable and they should just be decisive and get rid. But I guess if they get rid, it costs some money, does it, Sean?
Yeah, it does. Well, not a lot. He's on about 1.25 million a year, obviously less than a year to run now. So it's cost him about £1 million in compensation. Still £1 million, though. Yep. I'm going to make an anti-board statement. I think they did the wrong thing over the summer period, and the writing was on the wall last season, and they needed to act over the summer, and that's the reason their indecisiveness is why we're in this situation now. I mean, what was it? And we said this last week, 5 wins in 24, you know? All right, we finished on a win, but it hasn't worked. Billich gets, I've said this before, and I've been saying it for a while, Billich gets found out, he's got no plan B, he plays people out of position. And they've only got themselves to blame in the situation they're in because they didn't act over the summer. I would have acted, like Ian said, after Newcastle, if I hadn't have acted over the summer. But now I have this funny feeling. If you look at the history of Sullivan and Gold at Birmingham, they're not decisive on sacking managers. They held on to Avram Grant for too long. And I have a feeling that even if he does lose, he won't get sacked. And it will go on. And then it will go on till January. And they think, oh, if we can just stay in the division, let's just hold it out till the summer because we won't have to pay any compensation. We'll have the whole summer to find a new manager. We don't want to make a knee jerk. So I have this funny feeling, for all the talk, and I don't think he'll be offered a new contract, so I do not think he'll be the manager next season, but I have this funny feeling that if he keeps us sort of mid-table, he will still be the manager at the end of this season because he'd just do enough to keep us out of that relegation zone.
Well, we have to get to mid-table first.
We have to score some points first, Ian.
Yeah, to be fair, we're not that far off mid-table at the moment.
Well, how many points do we
get? It right. It is only 3 games.
Yeah, that's...
doom and gloom. We've lost... under Zola, when Zola came into the club, we lost 7 on the trot.
Yeah. And good point.
So... this is nothing new. Well, the only bit new of it is that all 3 games were away from home on the trot, which is very rarely, if ever, has happened in the past.
And at 3 grounds where we generally don't do very well.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, you look through the previous seasons, you'll see that we don't collect points generally at those grounds anyway. So,
yeah.
And as I said before, we only got 1 point in the season. We finished 7th. And this is the thing when people go, oh, Billich out, oh, he's used to it. He's took us to 7th and 11th. You go back, you'll have to go back to Harry Redknapp to find a manager with 2 seasons like that.
Yeah. I'm going to say one last thing that I'm criticising the board is, I think they need to manage their expectations. You know, I said Sacco was possibly living beyond his means. I think West Ham are trying to live beyond their means. You know, I mentioned earlier, you know, that we've borrowed money against TV, these payday loans. Recently, in Company's House, we've borrowed money against... we've mortgaged the free training grounds. We've mortgaged the lease of the London Stadium for 99 years. We've mortgaged the shop leases we have at Lakeside and Romford. You know, because...
why would they do that?
They would do it because...
well, it's not mortgage, is it? It's collateral.
All right, it's collateral, but it's the same thing. Basically, they've done it, Ian, because you can't borrow money offshore anymore against TV money. So the Premier League have outlawed it, but to help with cash flow, they've now got a hole in their budget. Fuck and they're it. Saying, well, how will we get the money? Well, the only collateral and security we've got now, we haven't got a stadium, is the lease and these training grounds. So,
but how can there be a cash flow problem when they've spent so little money in the... I mean, we forget, 25 million for Payet. Now, no doubt they didn't get all of that up front, but we've spent net in the last 2 transfer windows not very much money.
Net spend over the last 2 transfer windows is still approaching 50 million. Net spend, even with those in.
Well, this window was about 17.
19.2 million, and it was something like...
The Telegraph table, it was 14.5, and that's a figure I've seen elsewhere. But, I mean, in the previous transfer window, we had a net income, surely.
No, we didn't, because when you look at it... and I've done these figures recently because Tony Gale came out and said our net spend over the last 4 years was only 4 million. So I went back, I spoke to a senior source, and I found out the exact figures on each one, on this window and the last window. And it's a lot. It might not be 50 million, it might be 40 something million, because I haven't got the figures in front of me. But it's... my understanding of asking the figures to these senior sources, it was 19.2. figures have either been inflated or deflated in certain areas. Now, let's not argue over 5 million. And even with the sale of Payette, we spent a lot of money. Let's not forget we bought Lanzini and Snodgrass and all these other ones at the same time.
That was last season. We're talking this window, Sean. That'd be you. You put in all their wages for the whatever. You inflate the figures. The actual fees paid.
Yeah, I'm only talking about transfer fees. If you don't believe me, right, there's a very accurate website to look at. Look at Transfer Market, right, without an E, and have a look at the transfer. They're one of the most accurate sources of transfer. They go back like 10 years. Have a look at the net spend. In the last 4 years, and I worked this out, it was 104 million. So when Tony Gale was saying it was 4 million in the last 4 years, it was actually 104. He just missed the 100 million off. And that is where the money goes. Whatever profit we make as a football club goes straight into player trading. And people have this perception that the net spend's not very much. But look at Transfer Market. It's not a Clarence Hugh production. It's not pro ball. It wasn't written by Sullivan. It's independent, and that will show you the truth.
But the bottom line is they're having to borrow money to operate.
Yes.
Because they have basically they've never capitalised the club, have they? They've always come in and just managed the debt. They've never capitalised. Well,
they put in their 50 million quite early. I don't think they've put any money into the club since 2014, from memory. Well,
they put their
2013.
They put their money into take out.
Another argument you could say is they've not bought anyone decent enough to sell.
Well, Payet.
That's why we've had the net spend. Yeah, but hold up. They sold Payet. So how much did they pay
ten,
for Payet?
Well, it was nearly sold, 11, but yeah. And they sold him for 26.
Right, nearly 11. Sold him for 26.
Hang on a minute. I mean, Antonio, they bought for 7 million. If we sold him now, he'd be well over 20. Lanzini bought for 8. He'd be over 30. I mean,
hold up. They haven't sold him. So at the moment...
No, I know. They did. Huarte paid 8 million for him. He'd get 15 or 20.
The players they were buying under Allardyce had no resale value. A bit like the players that actually they've signed this season have got no resale value. So now that was a reason that they argued not to buy back Jermaine Defoe. Oh, he's got no resale value.
Far be it for me to defend Allardyce, but I mean, Angelo Ogbonna, would we not get more for him than we paid for him?
Not so.
You look at Cresswell, 3 million, and what would he be worth today?
Not sold.
You look at Piotte, Obiang.
But we've not sold him yet.
No, I know, but they have resale value, don't they?
But the players that we've bought and sold, what we're looking at is net transfer spend. When you look at a club like Tottenham, they'll buy club players that are decent, young and British, and sell them on at a top price, or even foreign, and sell them on for a top price. You know, they buy Trippier, get rid of Walker for 50 million, and they've already got Trippier, who's been at the club 2 years. Our transfer dealings have been, you could argue, and not being conducive for building a club to what the owners said they were going to do.
The problem is they bought too many Fagulis and Snodgrasses. Yeah, that's exactly the problem.
Right. Yeah. By the way, I'm just to put this one to bed. I'm going to tell you 19.2. I'm going to tell you the spend because I've just brought it up. Arnautovic 25 with add-ons. Hernandez 16. So that's 41 million. Out went Norfite. Was reported for 8 million, was only 4 million. Randolph was sold for 5, Fletcher for 4, Fagulli for 3.8 million, and Valencia for 5. Some of those have been inflated in the press. If we look at the last season, we spent 63.7 million and we sold 36.9. So in AU, 21.7 million, Lanzini, 10.8 million, Snodgrass, 10.8 million, Font, 8.28 million.
Matsuzaku,
6.39. Fernandes, 5.76. So that is, and the only outs were Payet, 26.3, Tompkins, 10.3. And that's why 26.8 million net spend last season.
If you look at Fagulli, didn't we have to give him 3 million a go? So actually, the £3 million.
We did, yeah. Well, not 3 million, but 3 million euros. Well,
so what did we get for him, actually? A million.
Just look at our January window. Our January window, Snodgrass and Font. How much was that? Did you just say nearly 20 million?
No. So, almost 20 million, 19.
So, I mean, what, you know,
Slaven Bilic picks, you know, by the way. Slaven Bilic picks, not chairman picks.
That's convenient. Yeah. they would say that. But the funny thing about that, I would point out, is that David Sullivan's mantra has always been, you never get value in January. You never get value in January. And yeah, he proves it himself. So it makes you wonder, well, why did he do that then?
Anyway, we've just gone over the hour. So we're going to bring this one to a close. Nigel, how do we solve this problem? Really short answer.
Win games.
Good. Ian.
Score more goals than we let in.
Yeah, like it. John, you've got the hardest one now to come up with something else.
It's going to be horrible, but it's going to be a new manager.
Oh, good, good. Right, thank you for this impromptu Cobra meeting for more than just a podcast. I think we've solved all of West Ham's problems. The meltdown is now officially over. I have been Sean. Nigel has been...
See you next Tuesday.
Ian has been...
Theresa May.
And John has been...
Happy.
Happy. See ya. Bye.
Bobby Moore.
Come on, you Irons!
Bobby Moore. More than just a podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.